Welcome to Bothy Project's 2021 Neighbourhood Residency Podcasts. My name is Leslie Young and I work for Bothy Project. We're a small arts organisation which hosts creative residencies for artists, writers, musicians and other creative people at Inshriach Bothy in the Cairngorms and at Sweeney's Bothy on the Isle of Egg. Our Bothys are small-scale buildings designed for one person to live and work in for short periods of time. They are off-grid and set within distinct landscapes. Inshriach is in a native woodland and Sweeney's on a croft with a view to the sea. Since we started in 2011, artists have used their time on residency to draw, paint, compose, finish books and plan new projects. Although some people have just spent time thinking, connecting with the landscape and appreciating time away from most modern conveniences. The Neighbourhood Residencies project differed from our normal residencies by the fact they were open to people from all walks of life as long as they lived in the neighbourhood of our Bothies. We invited people from Badenoch and Strathspey and the Small Isles. Badenoch and Strathspey is the area in the shadow of the Cairngorms, which follows the River Spey from Newton Moor to Granton-on-Spey. And the Small Isles are the inner Hebridean islands of Egg, Rum, Canna and Muck. We were also able to involve people from the Assynt and Coigach area in the far northwest of Scotland. We did this by working with the Assynt Foundation, who kindly allowed the use of the Assynt Art Studio for the project. Selected from an open call, the 9 participants, 3 from each area, spent roughly a week alone on residency and then participated in conversations with the other residents, initially to discuss the similarities and differences of life where they live, then going on to explore bigger issues. We hope you enjoy these insights. This podcast, More Holiday Homes Than People to Clean Them, unpicks the interlinked topics of housing, work and tourism across the 3 neighbourhoods. It was recorded over 2 days. In the first part, you'll hear Robbie, who's based in Nethybridge, Robin in Aviemore, Fliss from Rum, Nora from Egg, and Ishbel from Canna. But Sarah Bernstein, who's in Achiltibuie, starts things off.
It would be really difficult to not get to know people. And one of the things I like so much about living here is, you know, it's not just people my age that I'm getting to know. In fact, there are very few people my age here. But I like that kind of intergenerational relationship building. I think that's been something so nice coming out. Like, I was in Edinburgh for 6 or 7 years before, and you just get stuck with the same, you know, kind of people. You end up talking to people who just reflect your own interests back at you, and it's been really different here, obviously. Yeah, and, you know, eventually I got up the courage to join the hall committee, which I was reticent about, but just because, you know, you don't want to come into a place and seem like you're telling folk that, you know, you have a better idea of how to run things.
Like, I grew up in Caithness. I didn't get into studying the arts until, late 20s. I'm 40 now. You know, we're only sort of native of 5 years here. Like, it's somewhere in between for me here. There is a lot of warmth, and particularly now having a child, I've met a lot more people, and I've met people through the kids who point at you, go, that's the dance man. I'm trying to figure out, you know, the role of the artist in the very rural setting. I feel like it sort of intersects with stuff like my tentatively thinking about joining the hall committee, which I've got, yeah. I'm definitely hesitating about, but that's interesting to hear you've done it and you're okay. I think sometimes I've just got a bit of a nervousness maybe about being new and about suggesting new things, and because you say you need to live among community and get on, and you don't want to ruffle feathers too much, which I guess it's pretty mixed demographic, but there are a lot of second homes and holiday homes, and so it's just trying to find a way and navigate through all of that, really.
I think that's something that's been, I guess, frightening about being here, is that it's perhaps not sustainable if, you know, rents are so artificially inflated because there are so few long-term rental properties, and they have to keep pace more or less with, you know, what the income would be for a holiday let. And then on the other hand, you know, we might never be able to buy. And the one house for sale in the village right now is going for over 400K. Like, that's just not, it's not possible for anybody to buy here. Like, it's so beyond, you know, in terms of affordability.
I mean, Abby Moore, there was a house just behind me that was on for offers over 285 and it went for 55K over the asking price. No. Over the market value.
Wow.
So my friends had gone for it and, you know, scraped as much of their sort of, you know, getting inheritances early and all of that stuff, still missed out on it by about 20 something K.
On Rum, we don't have that problem at all yet. So all of the houses are owned by the I Love Rum Community Trust. So they're all affordable rented houses, actually, except one. We did sell one freehold as an income generator, but they live here at the moment. Yeah. What's it like on Egg? Do you have that? How many second homes are there on Egg?
There's practically none. Yeah. I mean, that's it's one of the huge benefits of community ownership, that you have a lot more control over the housing. So, I mean, it's complicated on Egg because there is a mixture of private owned houses and houses owned by the trust, but the trust have a definite ethos of not encouraging second homes, you know, people that don't live here. There's people who live on the island who have a little bothy or something, but that is their livelihood and they're living on the island all the year round, and people have always been very clear about that at any meetings and projects about housing. We don't have these empty holiday homes, and we can do that because of the community ownership. But there's still needing housing here. You know, people want to come and live here, and short of housing. So, yeah, you know, it's a complex business.
Yeah, we don't have that on Canna either. So we don't have holiday homes on Canna. In fact, we've just managed to negotiate release of land from the National Trust for Scotland so that we as a community can build houses. So after, we're saying after 30 years of them saying it wasn't possible, it is now possible, and we have done it. I don't see why somebody should have a holiday home and they stay in it for part of the year and then rent it out the rest of the year. So they're making money out of basically our landscape. All the money that they're getting for renting it out is going out of the local area.
There was an article in the West Highland Free Press from somebody on one of the community groups here talking about, you know, the demographic change and how now there are more folk in the village over 70 than there are under fives, I think. And there are more holiday homes in the village than there are people who can clean them. But there are so many young folk just trying to find long-term lets. And what often happens is they'll, you know, have a place to stay for the winter and then, you know, be turfed out for the holiday season. And it's so hard, like that fractures any potential sense of, you know, an integrated community.
But on the other end of the scale is that if you're planning housing for an area, then, well, I would want for Canna to have a facility that we can keep our old people on the island. And that actually, that's a great thing I always say about Egg, is that, you know, there's lots of children and people of all ages, and they all really, really mix together. And I think you can see it in the confidence in the children. We're so super lucky with my family that we've been able to keep my mum on the island. But that should be the same for the next person who becomes old on the mm-hmm. island. So you shouldn't have to be sending people away to care homes.
Absolutely. And that seems like a totally fundamental right, really, like to not have to move somewhere so drastically to survive and to live. And I suppose it's connected then with the, you know, the skills.
Maybe I should push for that more, that is in our development plan. And actually, I like the fact that you say it's more of a fundamental right. Because that, if you say that, it gives it much more seriousness.
You know, if you've got people that have been married for like 50, 60 years and one of them needs to go into care, you know, how kind of brutal that is to be splitting those people up. And, you know, one of them is being sent to a care home in Inverness and the other one is staying put. You know, it's so...
But you're right that, you know, the older people sometimes don't get so much attention. And on Egg, we've had to employ a couple of healthcare workers, which we didn't have before. So that's been a real positive about employing people with the right skills that can help to look after people in their own home.
At the moment, we don't have anybody to employ because everybody's like super overemployed.
Yes.
But hopefully, once we build the three new houses, that will bring more people in.
Yeah, the two go together, don't they? Because there's a young couple who've been here over the winter. She did part of the healthcare worker job. Now they're looking for summer accommodation and it's been a struggle for them. They're in a caravan for the summer. So yeah, we need lots of affordable housing and community housing and... you know, we don't have to have this matchbox houses on their own. You know, we can share a lot more facilities.
Yeah, maybe looking at different types of housing. Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
In the second section, you'll hear Ishbel from Canna, Fliss from Rum, and her snoring dog, Sarah, Kat, and Monica from Ascent and Coigach. But first, Sarah Hobbs in Aviemore talks about Kilbeg, the first planned village on Skye for almost 100 years.
Yes, so I work for an organisation called the Communities Housing Trust. This project is really, it's quite a unique and exciting project. So it's a partnership with the Gaelic College, Solmoarostig in Skye, and the Highland Council to develop and build homes, affordable homes, in Kilbeg. And the college is really nearby and the primary school is nearby and the nursery is nearby. So the heart of this project is really, Gaelic language and culture and heritage and, you know, helping to address social isolation and loneliness amongst the older folk. The affordability is protected into the future. We apply a legal title condition, which is called a rural housing burden, which basically means that the home will be offered at a discounted price if it's ever sold into the future. We, Communities Housing Trust, or another rural housing body can buy back the home as first refusal, basically, and then go on to sell it to somebody else again at a discounted or reduced price, discounted from open market value, that is. I mean, of course, because there's no definition of affordable homes, when we say affordable, we mean discounted from open market value anyway. The rural housing burden itself, it needs to be applied by a rural housing body. But Ishbel, have you got rural housing burdens applied to some of your properties?
Our houses will not be for sale. They'll only be for rent. Because the land is being bought from the National Trust for Scotland, I think that they will put that in the title deeds. We will not have private house ownership on the island. But then, as Fliss was saying yesterday, maybe we need to get away from this mindset of focusing on house ownership. So maybe in our new independent Scotland, that is the way forward, really. But a lot of people have said that they don't know what affordable housing is or affordable rent. But my understanding was that it's 80% of the median rent. That's what the UK government use as a measure.
Of the median rent in the area?
Yeah,
or...
it would have to be the area.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably still a problem in the Highlands because the rents are so high.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, like they're the second highest up here after Edinburgh, which obviously the rents there are extortionate.
Generally, our rents, I think, are probably about half what they would be on the mainland, because a lot of these houses are big detached houses, huge running costs, but because they're all in quite high council tax bands as well, like band D, think that's quite high. We seem to pay a lot of council tax anyway.
Well, I pay the same council. I pay more council tax here than I did when I was in London.
That's mental.
Because of just the way it's worked out, because it's on an area basis and then split between the population.
I guess there's something reflected here in how we make a living in each of our communities. Like, I'm quite interested actually to hear about the islands, because I guess what do you do on the islands and get up to and the way you make a kind of income and stuff?
Today I've done stuff because I run kind of campsite, so I've been working on that. So I started the day in the lambing shed, so I'm lambing, so I do that, that's work. And then I did some laundry for kind of campsite, because that's my business that I run. And then I went over with my sister to tag cattle because I have a croft and I have some cows. Those are at least three of my employments on the island. And Fliss and I both work and are just lots of community stuff as well.
For me, I'm mostly self-employed, but I do stuff with our trading company. So we're talking about, we've got job interviews to do tomorrow to get a new manager for the bunkhouse. On Rum, there's about five people who work for Nature Scot, which was Scottish Natural Heritage. And there's two that work for the Community Trust, two for the trading company, Rum Enterprise, school teacher, postman, the shop, Dave at the pier. That's quite an important job, being the pier master. And then there's a couple of people who work for Edinburgh University on the Deer Project, longest running large mammal study in the world ever. But people do lots of different things. I remember years ago I worked for Scottish Natural Heritage, and I was also the postie, and people came and saw me in the office, and then they saw me at the shop, and then they saw me with some children and wanted to know, like what's going on? Like, is there three of you? Nah.
So, yeah, on Canna, I suppose it's the same. It's those statutory jobs like postman, pier master, National Trust for Scotland Ranger, lots of people working, well, a few people working on the farm. Some people are actually working in the archive in Canna House, which is the sort of second best Gaelic archive in the world. Some tourism.
I should mention, because of the small owls has such brilliant internet, that our new residents, they mostly work online and it all works tickety-boo. So I made some notes because we were talking about slow tourism and we touched a little bit on this yesterday about longer stays and kind of volunteering, skill sharing and experiencing a holiday like a local and that kind of thing, and how we can encourage that kind of thing. I mean, what do you all think about that?
I mean, that sort of idea is why I set up Strathspey Story Walks, because there was nothing like it in the area, and I was really, really wanting to encourage people to really see a place, you know, see the place when they came to visit, and, well, not just see it, but to smell it and to taste it and to just be in it and, you know, see things they'd never seen before. And, you know, whether it's Aviemore being, you know, the adventure capital, whatever it is, oh no, that's Fort William. with the links with Aviemore being, you know, ski resort and quite extreme sports, there was nothing that was actually calm and quiet and slow and I just wanted to really encourage that, I think, because particularly because we've got so much here, there's so much in such a small area, and it usually just goes completely unnoticed.
For me, I moved up to the area just before the North Coast 500 sort of, I think it was in the process of being set up, like naming this road that people can now download online and then drive it. And I can even see the pace is really sped up. And it's like people are just trying to get around it as quick as possible. And there is an argument that people then come back to certain areas they want to explore further and everything. But for me, I'm trying to set up something similar, not story walks, but that whole idea of really slowing down and really kind of immersing in the natural beauty, just engaging all the senses and really experiencing an area. And I think there's a huge opportunity up here for getting away from that fast pace, from getting away from the high commercialism. So yeah, the whole slow tourism idea.
I totally agree with that. And I think what we all need to realize is people who come to areas like this, they like to have something that's packaged up for them. They come from a place where you book something and you know on Tuesday afternoon you're doing something very specific. And then they are quite overwhelmed. So you need to create those opportunities because I think people actually cherish that. They actually value to have somebody local who tells them what's actually happening here. People are really receptive to it. As a family, we've put up couch surfers and cyclists under warm showers. So that's a scheme of free accommodation. And those are, for example, people who just really don't want to cycle or drive totally lonely to the Highlands. They actually crave meeting a local. And sometimes you feel a bit like in a theme park, you know, I'm the local you can speak to. But we had once a cyclist. I know, it's funny, yeah. So I usually tell the same stories to all these people who come. But we had a cyclist once who hadn't spoken to somebody for 4 days other than in the shop because he didn't quite know how to do that. So it's also about just being aware and working with people. I'm quite tired of always trying to shoehorn people into, you know, a certain, you have to stay here for a week. You can do something with people for 2-3 hours and it still adds value. They'll still go away enriched.
Yeah, that links actually quite nicely, that sort of purpose element, Monica, that you were talking about, then links quite nicely with what in the Small Isles about possibly sort of volunteer worker tourists or workaway tourists and being able to bring something to the islands or bring skills. Or
it is a really good idea. I think we're just stuck with the, again, back to accommodation, I think, as well. It's like having a little bit of somewhere for them people to stay for a longer period of time, you know, which we haven't got other than, you know, like a little caravan or something. Like Nora was saying on Egg, they have their very nice volunteers house, so that works really well for them. They can have people come for, you know, a few months or a month at a time or longer. But we haven't got that yet, but except potentially we could use the bunkhouse over the winter as a when it's empty. But what about on Cano? Is there anything you could do, or would you be using your own accommodation?
Yeah, I'd have to use my own accommodation because there isn't anything at the moment. So because I've got workaways, well, paid workaways coming, and I'm renting accommodation off NTS for that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh.
I did have a place beside my house that workaways stayed in, but actually after 3 years of doing that, I think I don't want somebody else in my garden. It was great and we managed it all at the time, but our house is just so, it's like so super busy, and it's just, if I can financially afford to have them in another house, then that's just great. And I can use the kitchen now for like cooking and making jam and... But maybe that's like what you're saying, Monica, because we're talking about getting people to stay longer. So maybe it's actually having different types of, yeah, okay, get people to stay longer, but actually maybe having some shorter things that people can slot into.
In your earlier chat, the Small Isles chat, you mentioned something about that, you know, tourism in and of itself shouldn't be the end goal. It should be, you know, we shouldn't necessarily be thinking specifically with tourism, what can we do? It should be actually, what do we want to achieve as a community, or etc. Yes. Which I think is a much more pertinent point, actually.
Yes. So what we need is we need more capacity within our communities. So yes. So it would be great if we could get somebody that would come and sort out our island website.
Yeah, we could do with people, someone to set up a wood fuel business, to provide people with firewood, or somebody who could manage woodland, path management, waste management. These kind of things are all potential jobs or we're doing a thing with our energy, I think, with all the small owls are, and possibly they might be taking over the energy supply from Nature Scott, so there might be more jobs there, running that as a community company. I think it's just happened slowly, I think, but a lot of the things do get neglected because people are too busy. We're all spread so thinly that we can't, I think Nora said yesterday that there's lots of projects they want to do, but they've already got enough on. And we're always coming up with great ideas, but we just haven't got the time or the people to do it, or willing people, able people. So yeah, if we have to get, if we could get people to come and visit and share their skills, like Ishi says, like you said, Sarah, that would be fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
Actually, what a person could do is, actually come and draft up the project for us. That might be somebody to help with fundraising, you know. So we could just be ideas people. And
well, you know, we talked about the Small Owls think tank. Maybe this group should become the little think tank, the all of us in the Bothy project. Highland think tank. There you go.
It is true. And actually, I mean, you've basically talked about a mix of practical jobs and online sort of virtual jobs, which if locals can afford to buy houses up in the Highlands and Islands, then there's just way more opportunities now for new businesses if they are willing and able and can take risks. But it remains to be seen, because of course all of the housing stock is being bought up by people from the cities with much more disposable income. Or at least that's what we've certainly been seeing that a lot at work anyway.
So thank you, everybody, for that really kind of insightful analysis of the kind of the interconnections between your kind of your various kind of working lives. It's really helpful and interesting and quite sobering to kind of hear how all of those kind of elements kind of connect and actually at times disconnect. But it's also kind of great to hear that there are so many practical and kind of ambitious kind of possibilities that collectively can kind of be taken forward. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the second Neighbourhood Residency podcast, More Holiday Homes Than People to Clean Them. In the next podcast, you'll find out more about what each participant got up to while on residency at their neighbourhood Bothy. The residencies followed Scottish Government COVID guidelines, and all conversations between residents took place remotely. The neighbourhood residencies were initiated by Bothy Project in partnership with Small Isles Community Council, the Isle of Egg Residents Association, the Ascent Foundation and Cairngorms National Park Authority. The project has been supported by Creative Scotland, Cairngorms National Park Authority and Highland Council. This podcast was recorded by David Maxwell and edited by Jen Martin.